Matthew's Gospel, chapter 28, and I'm going to begin at verses 1 and 2. After the Sabbath, at dawn, on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. Ah, talk about shock waves. Yes, there had been an earthquake earlier at the time of Christ's death, recorded in Matthew 27, verse 51. And then evidently as the two women were on their way to the tomb that Easter morning, they could sense the earthquake. People knew there had been an earthquake. So the first earthquake was one of tremulous awe in nature at Christ's death. The second earthquake on Easter morning was one of exultant joy in nature as death received its death blow. And then, have you ever been in an earthquake or an earth tremor? I expect some of us have. I have. It's an unnerving experience when you feel the place around you shaking. It does things to you. You can churn up your emotions. You can do irrational things. I think of a couple of friends of mine who work with the Billy Graham team in America. Maybe I won't say their surname, their family name out loud, because this is going to go out, this sermon, on the All Souls website, audibly. So I wouldn't like them to suddenly hear their names being blurted out without warning. But their first names are Bill and Joan. Dear people, they've often worshipped here. And they live in Hollywood. And at the time of the Californian earthquake some years ago, their house was shaken. And then they could hear the car alarms going off around them as the cars were being shaken. And then Bill describes how unnerving it was to be seeing his wife sitting up in bed, not moving from the house, just praying. He said, "Darling," he said, "don't do that. He's far too busy to attend to you just now." And then they began to scrape a few things together so as to get out of the house quickly, because the whole house was rocking. And they got out. And then Joan discovered to her amazement the one article of value that she'd thought to take out with her. It was a tiny little jar of anti-wrinkle cream. And that's what earthquakes can do to you. You do irrational things. And here on this particular dramatic Easter Sunday morning, it was more dramatic than anything you can imagine. The whole face of the universe was being changed forever. And so there was running footsteps, there was alarm, there was fear, there was tremendous joy. And then this lightning-like angel who brushes aside with contemptuous ease all those elaborate precautions taken by the enemies of Christ to make the tomb sealed and secure and guarded against all interference. In a flash, the guards were flattened, the stone removed from the tomb, and the way cleared for the coming of the women who would be the first witnesses of the resurrected Christ. You can't stop Jesus. I don't think that we should be at all puzzled at the little differences of reporting by the four gospel writers. You know, one angel in Matthew, but then two feature in Luke and John. Presumably Matthew is concentrating on the angel who was speaking. And then the time of day? It depends, you see, on what time you started on your journey to the tomb. So at dawn, says Matthew verse 1 here in 28. Just after sunrise, says Mark. Very early in the morning, says Luke. While it was still dark, says John. Depends, when did you begin your journey? Sometimes there are critics around who love to highlight the little differences in reporting of the four Gospels, and they sort of remark on it as though to question the accuracy of the Scriptures. But we should in fact be grateful that there are sometimes these little differences of reporting in the various versions of the same event, because through these different perceptions and from their different perspectives, they fill out the picture. They're not in contradiction with each other. Actually, this being a Waterloo church, All Souls, you know, we were built as a national thanksgiving for the victory at the Battle of Waterloo way back and over a century ago. And that gives me a personal interest, of course, in the Battle of Waterloo. Well, in the Battle of Waterloo, two entire armies of spectators and participants were involved, and it depended on where you were in the field, what your part was in the battle, as to when the battle began. When did it begin? Well, at 10 o'clock, said the Duke of Wellington. No, at 11:30, said General Alava, who rode beside him. At 12, according to the opposing general, Napoleon, and Drouet. It began at 1, said General Ney. It depended on where you were and what your part was when the thing began. Same with the resurrection. It's very important for us to understand this. Actually, in point of fact, when we come up against critics who love to say, well, of course, the chronology of the resurrection is hopelessly mangled. You can't really portray a total coherent picture of the whole thing. I'd like to say to those critics, please get out your pencil, a bit of paper, a red crayon will do, and just spend 30 minutes with the Bible and just go through it, and you will find it does come together. All four accounts of the first Easter are totally reconcilable and consistent with each other. Of course, it was a day of breathless excitement, of frantic running as well. Evidently, one party just managing to miss another party as he went to the tomb or came back from the tomb. Rather like a sort of Victorian farce, those plays that used to be held years ago. It was that kind of a disorientated day. So I'm not asking you now to write at this point yourself with a red crayon or whatever, but you can always take it down from the recording of this message. The order of events was as follows. Something along these lines. Early on Sunday, the resurrection of Jesus takes place. It's marked by an earthquake. An angel descends and rolls away the stone from the tomb. Matthew 28, verses 2 to 4. And then the demoralized soldiers disperse into the city. Matthew 28, verse 11. Later to the tomb come Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome. Another group of women follow with the spices. That's in John 20, 1 and 2. Mary Magdalene arrives first. You see, John 20, 1 and 2, sees that the tomb is open and immediately rushes to inform Peter and John. Then the other Mary and Salome, on reaching the tomb, see the angel, Matthew 28, verse 5, and are told to tell the news to the disciples. They do so. Then the other women, including Joanna, approach. They see two angel figures, and they're reminded by them that Jesus had predicted his own resurrection. Luke 24, 1-7. Meanwhile, Mary Magdalene has alerted Peter and John, and they set off for the tomb. John 20, 3 and 4. Running, with Mary trailing behind. So by the time Mary has arrived at the tomb, Peter and John have already been into the tomb and have gone. John 20, verse 10. And Mary, on arrival, stays weeping at the tomb. John 20, verse 11. Then sees the two angels who ask her why she weeps, and it's then that she has that wonderful encounter with the risen Lord. John 20, verse 14. While this is happening, the other women have seen the rest of the disciples and told them of the events, which are regarded as an idle tale. Luke 24, verse 11. It's probably then, on their way back to the tomb, that Jesus meets them on the way, Matthew 28, verse 9, and they worship him. Sometime later that day, the risen Christ meets with Peter alone, Luke 24, verse 34, and 1 Corinthians 15, verse 5. Meets also with the two travelers to Emmaus, that's Luke 24, verse 13 to 35. And then meets later still with the entire group of disciples, excepting Thomas. And that's Luke 24, 36 to 43, and John 20, verse 19 to 25. Now, it only takes 30 minutes, just sitting down with a stub of pencil and a bit of paper, and you can crack it. Of course, it was a bewildering day, hence the emphasis of our message here in verse 8. So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid, yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Afraid yet filled with joy, the two emotions, the side by side. What has happened? This is awful. No, it's not. It's wonderful. It's like that. You can't stop Jesus. Oh, you can try, but you will fail. Everything seemed over during the Saturday of that weekend. The troublemaker was dead. The tomb was sealed. The guard was posted. Christ's followers are scattered. The movement is over. And the chief priests could watch news at 10 and go to bed, happy. Then at some point early on Sunday morning, something takes place. Another earthquake. The guards are flattened. The tomb is empty. The stone is rolled back. And shining angels have converted the tomb into a pulpit. He is not here, verse 6. He has risen. And then it's a word of mild rebuke. Just as he said. He did say so all along. Here, ladies and gentlemen, is the forming of a new movement, the Jesus movement. Hey, are you part of it? Yet? If not, is it time to start? Whoever you are listening, sharing in this service, sharing maybe through the recording of this message, wherever you are, is this a good time right now to say, I'm coming in on this thing? The Jesus movement, the fellowship of the resurrection. Why, it began that very Sunday. It doesn't look like much to start with, does it? Look at it. It starts with these loyal remnant. It starts with the loyal remnant. Three women. Yes, it's two women here, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James. It's Mark who draws attention to the third, Salome. They haven't come to anoint the body of Jesus. It's the second group of women who will come for that purpose. All these ones have come for is just to look, just to be there. Loyalty and love for Jesus pull them to the place. And they can hardly bring themselves to leave the scene on the evening of Good Friday. See, way back, Matthew 27, verse 60 is so interesting. That Joseph of Arimathea takes the body and places it in his own new tomb that he cut out of the rock, rolls a big stone in front of the entrance to the tomb, and Joseph of Arimathea, it says, and then he went away. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary were sitting there opposite the tomb. That's how Good Friday ends, with the two Marys. And that's how Easter Day starts, with the two Marys. They're last at the cross. They're first at the tomb. And theirs is the reward for loyalty. They are to be the first witnesses of the resurrection. The two of them, that tiny little instrument inserted into a solid mass of surrounding unbelief. They're opening up, those two witnesses, a crack in the prevailing worldview that was holding down a continent, that was holding down a whole world in the sleep of death. And that little crack was going to be widened by other witnesses to prize open a whole world. The loyal remnant, see, it starts right there. Last at the cross, first at the tomb. What did they want? Just to be there. They weren't hoping for very much. Let's just go and we love him. We loved him so much. We'll just go to that tomb again. So I want to say to friends here in church or to others listening, you may have entered into a spell of disillusionment about the church or about Christianity or doubt, or you may be entertaining a spirit of wistfulness, or maybe you've gone through disappointments and you're saying, is it worth bothering? Hey, bother. Keep coming. Hang around as those two did. Hang around. It's the people who hold on and persist who will be rewarded when something sensational and wonderful happens in the church. Oh, you may say, our church is a bit dull, it's not much up to anything. Keep on, hang on. You will find that something will happen. It will touch you and help you. So it starts with the loyal remnant. It continues with the futile resistance. of the enemies. So I'm looking here at verse 11 to 15. Do you see it there? While the women were on their way, some of the guards went into the city and reported to the chief priests everything that had happened. So the word gets out. Earthquake, flattened guards. When the chief priests had met with the elders and devised a plan, they gave the soldiers a large sum of money, telling them, "You are to say, his disciples came during the night and stole him away while we were asleep." The chief priests, the religious boffins of the day. We who are caught up with the wonder of the resurrected Christ feel like saying to the chief priest, "Oh, you're still there? The story's moved on beyond you. The cat is out of the bag. The message is spreading. The tomb's empty. Jesus has been seen. The disciples are now being changed. What are you doing? Aren't you somewhat redundant now to the whole picture? What are you doing? Fiddling around with feverishly bribing the still shaking guards. A desperate act of damage limitation. Why, you could have saved your money." Always money. Always money that they were on about, these enemies of Jesus. They buy his betrayal with money. Now they attempt a lying cover-up with money. You can't stop Jesus with money. Some people try to, but it's an example of futile resistance. You sometimes hear of the efforts of certain other religions trying to coerce people to their own belief system, or buying converts with financial or material inducements. That sounds like a very short-term approach. Of course it's going to fail. The chief priests, we look at them in their short-term contingency exercise. It wouldn't be long before they would find themselves coughing in the exhaust of a new movement that had got out of hand and had the world in its sights. So that leads on to the third part of our little story this morning. You can't stop Jesus. The resurrection movement begins with the loyal remnant. It continues with the futile resistance. Thirdly, it ends with the appointed regrouping for world mission. You must have noticed the reference to Galilee here. Twice it's mentioned. Look at verses 6 and 7. "He is not here," said the angels. "He has risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay, then go quickly and tell his disciples, he has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I've told you." And Jesus himself says in verse 9 and 10, Jesus says, "Greetings." They come to him, clasped his feet and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me." Well, we've only got to go back to Matthew 26 at the Last Supper and read verse 31 and 32, where Jesus quotes from Scripture that the sheep are going to be scattered. Then he says in verse 32, "But after I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee." So there's a plan. The raising of Jesus will take place, and then the regrouping of this entire little movement to start prizing open the world. Jesus predicts that there will come a scattering. Everything is going to come apart. And sure enough, even at the Easter day itself, you know, there's not the faintest hint of coordination. Of the right hand knowing what the left hand's doing, it's chaos all around, running feet, breathless, startled. But then there will come this regrouping, he says, and in it will come the formation of the mission. And it'll happen not in Jerusalem, but in Galilee, at a mountain rendezvous. Verse 16, he says that. The regrouping, that always is important. Are we part of that? Again, I ask the question. Are we part of this world mission that is determined by the grace and love of the Lord Jesus Christ to win the world? We have the whole world in our target. And it's not a movement of coercion at all. It is a movement of beckoning love. Come and join us. We have something to tell you. We have something to share with you. We have somebody to share with you. And there may be some who say, I'd like to be part of this regrouping. What do I do? Oh, all you need to do is to keep in contact with the followers of Jesus, make friends with them, learn with them. We put on in this church a course. It's called Christianity Explored. It's going to start again on May the 7th. That's a Wednesday night, 7 o'clock in the evening. Bit of food, then a bit of talk around the Bible, bit of learning together. You can come. Be part of this own regrouping and help that to get your own life into a way that is going to be pleasing and satisfying forever. Let's be part of that. Ask afterwards. We'll help you. Write in. We'll help if we can. He is going ahead of you, verse 7. Christ must always be the leader. It's to him we look. We don't have to look to any great incandescent figure, human figure. We look to the one who is God-man, both God and man, in one and the same person, Jesus Christ, once crucified, now raised, bodily raised, physically raised, visibly raised, and now leading this world movement. You can't stop Jesus. It starts with the loyal remnant. And even if it's tiny in some parts of the world, there's still a remnant there, a little group. We want to encourage those friends who are often on the buffeting end of the enemies of Jesus and to encourage them as they encourage us with their magnificent examples. The loyal remnant. He continues with a futile resistance. Can't buy Jesus off. You can't fight him off. It ends with the appointed regrouping. No one can stop Jesus. That's Easter.